You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another amazing episode of Mixed Martial Arts.
Mixed Mental Arts.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for an amazing episode, another amazing episode of Mixed Mental Arts, starring Brian the Kid Callen and Hunter Tailpiece Big Brain Motz. Hunter, I want to thank you for creating a major firestorm and alienating both Joe Rogan, our biggest advocate at one point, not anymore, and Sam Harris. Want to know what the fuck you were thinking. For those of you who don't know, Hunter had this idea of teasing people out of power, quote unquote, and I was like, dude, can you not call, you know, Richard Dawkins an upper-class twit? And can you not call Sam Harris a rich kid, etc., because it's just going to piss him off? And also, can you not say things on Joe Rogan like, with friends like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, science doesn't need enemies? In the last half hour, you were doing so well. And then you had to destroy all of it. And then you couldn't leave that alone. That would have been fine. You would have been invited back probably with Sam Harris, because we could have gotten Sam Harris on the podcast. But you had to really, just really obliterate any chance. And, you know, I was like, well, he's not listening. Way to go. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen. From the podcast that could have had Sam Harris on, we are no longer there. Now, I will say that we're going to get to a lot of stuff, but let's talk a little bit about Sam Harris. I've listened to several of his podcasts. I'm personally a big fan, and because I think he's intellectually very honest. I think that Sam has done a lot of thinking and has really worked hard at least if you don't agree with his position, he's worked very, very hard at, I think, fortifying his position from as many angles as I think he possibly could. And this is not, you know, you would probably say effort is not what you're worried about. And I'm sure there's a lot that you like about Sam Harris, but I've found him, the one thing I will say about Sam, and I think, and I've not read his books, so full disclosure, and I need to, and I'm going to, but I have listened to probably, I'd say, 5 or 6 hours of him. That's enough to have at least a small opinion on this. And I will say that I was sort of taken aback by the fact that Sam seemed to really get hung up on details. And that detail with the Jordan Peterson thing on how they define truth.
Right.
And, you know, look, I mean, I think it was very hard for Sam to move on. It's just the way he felt. But again, I think he's very intellectually honest. I think that we have to be careful not to treat our understanding of the brain and the new science as the gold standard, because science is always changing and developing. And I don't know that your sort of accusation that Sam Harris is not aware of how his feelings affect his thinking is necessarily even lost on Sam.
Well, there's a lot to unpack.
So shame
there.
On you is what I'm saying.
Shame on me. Thank you. And yeah. You're not the only person who has tried to shame me, by the way.
I'm not trying to shame you. Yeah. I was just puzzled by your, you know, you do have a bit of an axe to grind with a lot of people like this. And I think I understand why, but maybe you could kind of explain it since you've destroyed it. Because I would have loved to have had you guys on and have had a constructive conversation. Yeah. You know,
well, I think the first thing to realize is that there's, you know, part of what everybody has seen in the last month or the last couple of months is my own culture, the Dutch culture, is a culture that is not known for its subtlety, its tact, or its charm. Like, it tends to be very forceful. Your sister Kathleen described.
Well, but you know better than that. You were playing the character of a Dutchman.
I was.
Yeah, you're way smarter than that. You were deliberately.
Yeah, I was trying to provoke a reaction. Yeah, yeah.
And which, by the way, isn't really actually very you.
No,
you're a very polite and considerate guy. So it was this sort of this new experiment you were trying.
Well, and part of the experiment is that we've been trying to figure out how to get all these ideas out of books. Mm. So many of these book ideas have been sitting around for 50, 60 years, and they just haven't moved. And a lot of this came down to, you know, a lot of slow thinking that I've been doing about how that works. And one of the most interesting things that ever happened in an episode of ours, and I don't remember which one it was, but at some point we were having a conversation with a guest and it started to get a little bit heated, or there started to get a little bit of conflict. And suddenly the Sicilian in you comes out and you're like, now you've got my attention. Mm. And I realized that actually that is how you move these ideas. Now, was my approach and was my strategy effective? Well, like,
probably not. Well, again, because what I think happens is with guys like Sam is they'll just ignore you if you're not careful, right?
And I think it gets down to as well as so there's a whole conversation there. But what I think did happen and what did work, even if it's in a beta, terrible, ultimately burned a whole bunch of valuable bridges with Rogan or Sam or whoever else, is that by creating social drama between two individuals, people were drawn into that conflict and were like, what's this beef about? What's this conflict about? And then in order to make sense of that conflict, they have to understand each side's point.
So let me stop you there, because the problem was, I don't know that there is a conflict to be had with Sam. Let's focus on that.
Yeah, let's unpack that.
Because that's what I'd like to unpack, because I don't see, you know, the idea that Sam is very aware that the enemy is being atomistic about your thinking. I mean, he's always talking about the fact that he wants to, I mean, this is why he wrote a book with an Islamic scholar. This is why he has Islamic scholars on. It's why he's always in good faith putting people on and having these real conversations with them. I mean, you know, Jordan Peterson is somebody.
That's the key thing. So you said a very interesting word in your description of what's, much earlier in your description of what Sam Harris does, which is that he fortifies his argument. Mm-hmm. So what he does is he starts from an argument and then he builds out around it and he tries to justify his point.
I don't know if I agree with that. What I meant was that he has worked very hard to fortify his point of view, which is always changing. But I mean,
I think here's the interesting thing. So let's talk about Tom Woods.
Right.
So would you say that Tom Woods has a view of the world that is grounded in reality?
Probably not.
Probably not. Or I mean, let's just, you know.
I mean, I like a lot of what Tom Woods has to say, but no, I would say he does not.
Right. Now
he's when you say that 2% of everything should be government run, that wouldn't work.
So last night I got a message from a guy, or actually I probably got the message months ago, but I finally responded to it from a young guy named Bryce. And Bryce was confused by my behavior. And he said, because the last time that Tom Woods was on your show, he kicked your asses. So he listened to that podcast and he thought that Tom Woods won and that we were wrong.
I wasn't even aware that we were in a debate.
Well, exactly. So, you know, for me, that first Tom Woods podcast was about just trying to hear everybody out. That was very much the stage that we were in. We were like, we're having all these thinkers on, they have different opinions, and we're trying to sort through it. But we hadn't really built a worldview yet. And so we heard someone out like Tom Woods. But this guy had taken it that we had lost to Tom Woods, and because of that, he went and followed Tom Woods. And he said, this is your debate with Tom Woods, debate in inverted commas, was the reason why I became an anarcho-capitalist. And this reveals an important thing about fundamentalists, which is that young people often watch, they see who seems to be winning socially, and they follow the person who seems to win.
Who's burning who?
Who's burning who?
Well, you know, Joe Rogan asked me to be on the podcast with Alex Jones and Eddie Bravo.
Yeah.
I was going to Austin, but I don't know that I would have taken, even if I hadn't been there, I don't know that I would have taken that opportunity, even though it would have been watched by so many people, because I don't think that there would have been anything productive that would come out of that, because I don't think that they are that Alex Jones is starting from a very fair. I don't think he's starting from a very honest position.
Right.
I think he's playing a character.
Yeah.
I think he's a showman. I think he's, you know, I think he's way more interested in making InfoWars as big and as lucrative as possible. And he speaks. You know, I've been on the planet for 50 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sorry, but all my instincts tell me that this guy, in a lot of ways, is a con man and a bit of a fraud.
Yep.
You know, the thing is, like, you know, like what makes people like Alex Jones relevant is, yes, that they spend a lot, they have a lot of energy, and so they're going to be right sometimes, or they're going to be half right, or they're going to be a quarter right. But he's his own best cheerleader.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that he loves Trump,
because mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways they're very similar guys, and that's, well, not a compliment.
And a lot of this, a lot of what I've been thinking about for a year or more is that classic quote: "All it takes for evil to triumph in the world is for good men to remain silent."
Yeah.
And you and I are terrible self-promoters.
Yeah.
And we're terrible self-promoters because we're motivated by motivation 3.0. It's all autonomy, mastery, and purpose. So we're not good at promoting ourselves. We're only good at promoting things that we genuinely believe are in the best interests of the community.
Yeah, and also, if there's going to be a situation where, you know, I'm going to debate someone like Alex Jones, there's no winning that debate. There's no way if people who listen to him
mm-hmm.
and love him and, you know, and also there's no way that you're going to actually get through to his listeners or to him with what I would consider a rational argument, because what he would do is say, all my sources are false and fake
yeah.
news. And it's very hard to have an argument with somebody who's basically saying, I'm the only source of truth here, and everybody else is being duped, is on the take, is a liar, is being controlled by the CIA, the shadow government. I don't know how to even have a conversation with somebody
right.
like that.
So, in other words,
crazy.
What you're saying is that you're saying that Alex Jones is interested in personal power and is willing to do literally anything to get it.
Yes, and that's so exactly how I feel.
He's very much like a McCarthy figure.
Yes.
He spreads, you know, he spreads fear in the name of some sort of justice.
Yeah, he's got these, you know, this whole, apparently he can read into every code in the Podesta emails and everything
yeah.
else, and Barack Obama spent $65,000 on quote-unquote hot dogs, so he's bisexual, and he went to a male-only gay
exciting.
Party. Yeah, he's got 1,000 things where
yeah.
you're just like, I don't even know how to respond to this stuff.
Right.
But, and he would say, well, that's because the truth is too much for you, and I have the truth and my sources.
That's right.
And I, you know, I mean, I Joe had him on, and I'm, you know, okay, but it was just a very strange.
Well,
it's not that heartening, and I really worry that we're really getting off topic, because I want to get back
to
Sam
Harris. Think it is, but it's on topic.
But I very much worry that we are living in a time where we are losing the ability. Young people are losing the ability, and I hope I'm wrong. And I hope I'm wrong, but that they're losing the ability to decipher between what is fake news and what is real news, because it's difficult when you've got that much information out there.
Well, and the challenge is, this is a new challenge, right? But it falls into an old pattern. And what the founding fathers had is they had this broad intellectual matrix that allowed them to separate shit from shinola, to figure out what was a lemon and what was the real deal, to separate the wheat from the chaff, the sheep from the goats. And that's the point of mixed mental arts, is to provide people with a framework that allows them to be able to spot what is gold and what is fool's gold.
Well, that's right.
And so
that's the most important thing.
That's right. It's to make you a
shaft, all that stuff.
It's supposed to, and that's, you know, there was that great tweet that I showed you beforehand where someone literally said, I used to believe in conspiracy theories until I heard Big Mike.
Yeah.
And Big Mike taught me that wisdom is greater than knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of knowledge out there in the world. There's a lot of facts. There's a lot of information. But there's not a lot of wisdom.
And is that your indictment of Sam Harris?
Well, so what wisdom allows you to do is it allows you to see patterns that other people might not see. And I think it's worth clarifying, what is Hunter Motz's one talent? So Hunter Motz's one talent is that he is the tutor of death. That is what my students call me.
Yeah.
And in the same way that
you're able to see what somebody's deficit is, right?
I'm able to see the holes in people's mental game very quickly, the same way that a fighter would, or, you know, the same way that a mechanic can quickly hear what's wrong with the car and know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my one gift. So I'm very good at spotting certain problems. Now, it's worth noting that very often I feel the problem before I can express the problem.
Huh.
So the detectives talk about the hinky meter.
Mm-hmm.
So the hinky meter is when your gut, something bothers you you in your gut. Something doesn't feel right.
It's exactly what happens to me with Trump. It's exactly what happens with me with Alex Jones.
Yep.
There's something in my gut, and I just go, I don't like this guy at all.
That's right. And then what you have to do is you have to probe, you have to test, you have to figure out, and that's how you begin to understand them.
Especially with me, because I like pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
I have real criminals who are friends. For real.
Yeah.
I'm friends with really real criminals.
Yeah.
And I love them, and I grew up with them, but it's just interesting that when I see a guy like Alex Jones, I don't believe him.
And crucially, there's I think that 2016, the problem is not that we have one Joseph McCarthy, it's that we have many Joseph McCarthys. Mm-hmm. And there are people like Alex Jones who are willing to do and say anything to get power. Tom Woods, I think, is the same thing. And it seems that but so I think the crucial thing, what Tom Woods does, which is brilliant, is that he seems reasonable. So he talks in this calm, measured voice. And he, he talks about logical fallacies. He talks about the importance of intellectual discourse. He talks about engaging with other people's opinions. But if you actually look at what he does, he has the same bag of tricks that Sam Harris has and the same bag of tricks that the Christian fundamentalists had, which is what they do is that you raise an objection to their point of view. They worry it away until there's nothing left. And then if you challenge them too much, they accuse you of committing a logical fallacy. So they accuse you of intellectual dishonesty. They accuse you of strawmanning. They accuse you of appeal to authority. But if you actually listen to their behavior, then you'll realize that they are never, ever wrong. And that, when someone is never, ever wrong, that sets the Tutor of Death's hinky meter off the charts.
Right.
Because the basis of actually learning is making mistakes. We've been talking about the importance of making mistakes and learning from them for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to Sam Harris's podcast, what you'll realize is that Sam Harris is never wrong. All he does is fortify his position. So I'll give you an example. There's the John Haidt podcast. So at the very beginning, John Haidt raises that there are two elephants in the room. And the first elephant is this rationalism versus intuitionism thing. And the second elephant is this group selection thing. And then they proceed to not talk about the two elephants in the room.
Explain to me, what do you mean? So Jonathan Haidt says, Sam, you and I disagree on two major
issues, huge things. So
one is that the human mind is not rational. You think the human mind is rational. I think it's intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, run by emotion first.
That's right.
And then the second thing is
this group selection thing.
What does that mean?
So that means that evolution happens at every single level. It happens at the genetic level. It happens at the tribal level. It happens at the cultural level. It happens at every level conceivable. And the most important one in terms of Sam Harris. Well, they're both important, but the first one, rationalism and intuitionism, obviously Descartes' error, we've talked about endlessly.
Yeah.
And the problem is that so much of this comes down to the distinction between rationalizing and reasonableness, which are two totally different mental states. So rationalizing is where you are justifying what you feel and believe. And it's, this very reactive form of thinking. And reasonableness is this state where you raise an objection and the other person takes it in, digests it, sorts through it, sees if it's true. Mm-hmm. Now, if you read John Haidt's book, you come to realize that the word reason has changed in its meaning since 1776.
The happiness hypothesis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Ben Franklin, I've told the Ben Franklin Cod story before, but Ben Franklin, understood that he was an intuitive person. He understood that his feelings drove his thinking. And so when he was talking about reason, it's likely that he was talking about reasonableness. He was not talking about having reasons for believing the things that you do, which is rationalizing.
Okay.
So we're talking about this new view of the brain, but part of what your dad made the point about so brilliantly last time is that none of this stuff is new. Humans have been around for a long time, and they've long known that people's feelings drive their thinking. That's the basis of the golden rule.
Again, that's not lost on Sam, I'm sure, either.
Well, it may not be lost, and this is where we get down to between what Sam preaches and what Sam practices. And there's a big, big difference between, talking about the dogma of science and living your life in accordance with those principles.
Right.
Because Sam says things like, if you don't think of yourself as a human being, right, as a member of the Homo sapiens, that's a problem for all of us. But let's explore what that means. So if you really think that you're no different from any other person, then that means that you have to allow for the fact that if you were born into the Islamic culture, that you would probably think the same way that they do. And you then have to ask yourself a reverse question. Well, if they were born into that culture and just sort of blindly picked up a culture, what culture did I, Sam Harris, blindly pick up? What are my blind spots?
That's important, yeah.
What are the things that I'm not seeing? And in fact, there's a name in the academic literature for the culture of people like Sam Harris. And I've spent time in that culture, and I know it very well. It's a culture known as the Weirds. And it's Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic. And the higher you go up the educational level, the weirder you get. The more of a libtard you become, the more of an egghead you become. And the defining feature, and this is again in John Haidt's A Righteous Mind, the defining feature of the weird culture is that you don't understand that things are connected. You don't understand that there are relationships and that there are consequences. So Sam Harris does something like Go On Bill Maher the other night, and he just sort of says all of these statistics. He's like, there are these statistics about, you know, the Arab world. Now, the interesting thing is that Sam says we're painting a picture with statistics. And he's exactly right. He used the right verb. When you use statistics, you're painting a picture. You're not describing reality.
That's a good point.
You're creating an image.
Because every time I hear those statistics, having lived in the Arab world, you're not going to learn about what those people are like with statistics.
Yep.
Lies, damn lies, and statistics.
That's right.
Yeah.
And crucially, that weird culture loves statistics. And they repeatedly confuse statistics for reality. So look at Hillary Clinton. She had all these statistics. There were all these polls that said she was going to win. And then reality bit. And in fact, that's a long pattern of behavior with that weird culture. Robert McNamara loved statistics.
Yes, he did.
And he ran the entire Vietnam War based on statistics.
He was a number cruncher.
Yeah. And then what happened?
Yeah.
Well, turns out that reality had other ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, millions of deaths later, you can watch The Fog of War. And it's an amazing documentary. And what does Robert McNamara say? He says that he realized that they didn't know enough about the Vietnamese. Yeah. They didn't really understand.
Well, General Giap, I think it was him who said to McNamara or his underling, you guys should have picked up a history book. You should have known that we've been fighting for our independence since we were around.
Yeah.
And you were going to have to kill every man, woman, and child before we gave up. They weren't taking into account the emotional power.
Yep.
That they were carrying around with them. And that emotional power of being strong to say, I'm willing to die for a cause.
That's
Are
right.
you?
And that's the point. Every story has two sides. And the great success of Fog of War is he talks about, and this is what I find fascinating, because I did a response video to the Sam Harris Bill Maher thing on Real Time, which has now promptly been blocked because I used too many clips from pop culture. And so literally every studio in the world was like, you literally just stole all of our movies. Yeah. So,
Hey, that's the other thing, Hunter. I want to apologize to everybody for Hunter's impossibly long blogs. And I have to read his impossibly long emails, but you've gotten better. You've gotten more brevity.
Well, and we're going to fix that. And, you know, but the one of the great things in The Fog of War is that he talks about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the reason why, a big part of the reason why the Cuban Missile Crisis did not end in nuclear Armageddon is because Tommy Thompson, who was an advisor to the president, had actually lived with Nikita Khrushchev. Wow. He'd actually spent time living with Nikita Khrushchev. And so there was a lot of discussion about this sort of soft power approach where they figured out, you know, Tommy Thompson was like, this is where Khrushchev is right now. I understand what he's going through. His problem is that he has to say to the Russian people, if he can say to the Russian people, we managed to avoid a ground invasion of Cuba, then that's a win for him. And he can walk away with that.
Save face. Let him save face.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so,
huge for men.
Yeah.
And
for a leader. And the point is that, you know, McNamara kills millions of people. And at the end of the day, what does he realize? He realizes that statistics will mislead you. They misled people in the 2008 housing crisis because there were all these pretty mathematical models that made people feel they had an understanding of the on-the-ground reality. But what it really came down to was empathy. Now, this is where we really get into the problems with Sam Harris's thinking. Because that we obviously the Arab culture we know is an honor culture. And we know that the Southern culture is an honor culture. Now, Sam Harris says we're in a war of ideas, and we are in a war of ideas. There's no doubt about that. But the weird culture, the liberals, the libtards, have been in a war of ideas with the Southern honor culture, not just for the last 50 years.
Well, since I guess we won that war in 1865.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Hillary Clinton certainly didn't win that war last year.
No.
So the point is that if you want to talk about being responsive to evidence, then if the liberals are really going to be responsive to evidence, then they have to understand that they don't have a good strategy. Their strategy sucks.
I will say, I've heard Sam Harris break down the Bible and the Old Testament. And what he does is he finds these logical inconsistencies.
Yeah.
And then as if that's the point of religion, right?
That's right.
As if you're going to apply the law of rationality. But more importantly, it's fine if you want to do that, but you're not going to change anyone's religious mind.
No.
And you can be religious and also be a rationalist in your life. I mean, in other words, you can go to church and be very religious and also get your bills paid on time, pay
your
taxes,
totally.
Raise your kids with good values. When you're sick, go to the doctor, take antibiotics. I mean, we do these things because you can believe in the scientific method. You can believe in being rational for the most part, but you can also want to transcend, be inspired by something you can't explain. That's something that gives you comfort. That could be the community of church. There are a lot of values. But again, I don't know that Sam Harris would disagree with this stuff.
Well, let's take an example. So Dan Carlin, when he was on Sam Harris's podcast,
yeah.
Well, it's very interesting. And this, I didn't find this, but
I love
you know,
Dan Carlin. Yeah.
Dan Carlin's amazing, and I was recommended. Firstly, it's worth noting just how many people Sam Harris has pissed off. Mm. He has a long list of people that he's pissed off in terms of setting off that hinky meter. He's pissed off Glenn Greenwald, Reza Aslan, Batman, Ben Affleck, Omar Aziz. There's a long list of people that Sam Harris has pissed off. One of the interesting things was after I said this on Joe Rogan, all these people came to me and they all brought me different pieces of what they saw was wrong with Sam Harris. So they handed me this.
One of the things I thought was interesting I read is that he's a neuroscientist because he got his PhD in neuroscience. But neuroscience is, that doesn't mean you're an expert on the brain.
Well,
it's a misleading, because I've read now 5 books by neuroscientists.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, A Billion Wicked Thoughts, I have a bunch of things.
Thinking fast and slow.
So it's a little bit misleading to consider that to think that because you're a neuroscientist, which really would mean you have your PhD, that you're an expert on the brain. It means that you've done some experiments and you have recorded data and you have gotten a picture of how the brain might work under certain conditions. When you do an MRI scan, it doesn't necessarily mean that because that area of your brain lights up, that is something you can draw absolute conclusions about, okay?
Well, and
et cetera, et cetera.
Well, but also it's worth realizing what the general public doesn't realize. To them, it often seems like there is science, and it is this great monotonous thing. But
neuroscientist sounds like, wow, it sounds like you operate on the brain.
But there's actually a lot of bad science, and there are a lot of bad PhDs. And for example, a lot of psych studies can't be replicated. And if you can't replicate those studies, then that means they're not worth shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and on top of that, there's a journal known as PLOS ONE. And PLOS ONE is 70% of articles submitted are published. 70%. That's a really high acceptance rate. And guess what? It's pay to publish. If you pay money to the journal, then there's a 70% chance.
So now you've been published, and that means...
And guess what journal Sam Harris published in?
PLOS ONE.
Yeah. So, and also, if you do a little digging on his PhD, there's actually a statistician who did an analysis of Sam Harris's PhD. 7-part analysis. And he says that, you know, Sam Harris's PhD is exemplary in the number of things that it gets wrong. There are huge problems with the PhD. And you mentioned fMRIs. There's a very famous study where they did an fMRI on a dead salmon.
Yeah.
And, you know, its brain lit up and they drew some conclusions.
Yeah.
So the point is that there's you hear something like PhD, but obviously to this community.
Yeah, and again, it's not to I don't want to bash Sam Harris's PhD or the fact that Sam Harris put a lot of effort again, and I'm a fan of a lot of what he does. He's put a lot of effort into, you know, becoming the person that he is, and I think that Sam Harris actually adds a lot of value. He may also not in certain instances, but I don't want to gossip about his PhD. But I do want to just mention that it's a little bit misleading to call somebody a neuroscientist, because it's probably not as impressive as you might think if you got into the nitty gritty. Let's just put it that way. That's kind of what I meant, right?
Sure, but I think the important thing to realize is that none of this is...
Well, and I'm sorry, let me just interrupt.
Yeah.
It's also important to talk about... I didn't want to, you know, dissect Sam Harris's PhD too much, but it is important to talk about what it takes to get a PhD and the fact that it's pay to play. I mean, pay to publish in a journal like that, because it Sam Harris is treated a little bit like a sacred cow.
Yeah,
like he's so smart that he's untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
That he's so smart that, you know, he couldn't possibly be wrong.
Mm.
And I think it's very important to show that Sam Harris is human.
Well, and we all are. And yeah. The crucial thing is to realize is none of this is personal. I don't, it's not,
yes,
so the Christians,
that is important.
The Christians have this great saying that you can love the sinner and hate the sin. So I don't even have a problem with Alex Jones as a person, but I do have a problem with his behavior. I do have a problem with the public role that he takes. And it's the same thing with Tom Woods or Sam Harris.
Yeah.
I don't think that they are, on balance, contributing in positive ways to the conversation, and that they are promoting ideas that promise a lot of benefit that they're not going to deliver. They're snake oil salesmen, and they're selling intellectual snake oil. So there's a whole lot of promise, and it's not grounded in reality. It's not actually going to do what they say. And so if you listen to the Dan Carlin interview, you know, Sam Harris is talking about, oh, Islam, 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 Islam. And Dan Carlin, who comes from a place of history, keeps on saying, yeah, Sam, you're saying that, but if you were to, let's just imagine you were to get rid of Islam, don't you feel like something else would just come in its place? I mean, we've seen that time and time and again. You remove Saddam Hussein, you remove Gaddafi, someone else comes in. All you've done is created a power vacuum.
Well, look at where do you think when communism got rid of religion,
yep,
or at least tried to, how did that work out?
It didn't.
Right.
Because people need a belief system and they need a meaning system.
That is 100% true.
Exactly. And in fact, science is a belief system. And that's, for example, why I thought the whole conversation with Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris was a colossal waste of time.
Yeah.
What a waste of 2 hours.
It was.
Because science is a belief system. It's not about the truth. It's about evolving better and better beliefs in light of the evidence. And clearly, anybody who spends their time talking about truth is not a scientist. They don't even understand the point of science. The point of science was that you saw after the European wars of religion these two sides that both believed that they knew the truth and were willing to kill each other, even though they were fighting over the same book that was about loving thy neighbor as thyself.
You're talking about the Protestant and Catholic
That's right.
wars? Yeah.
And so, you know, the science got lost along the way, but what people like John Haidt and David Sloan Wilson and Joe Henrich and Dacher Keltner and Jennifer Jacquet and all the great people that we've had on this show, literally 200 scientists who almost nobody knows are trying to do is to get science back to being a belief system. And when we had Dacher Keltner on most recently, you weren't here because the Brian Callen show is only rarely lucky enough to have Brian Callen on.
Brian Callen's just very busy making a leap on set in Hollywood or traveling somewhere.
By the way, congratulations on the pilot thing.
Thank
That's
you,
huge.
Sir. Thank you very much. But keep going.
So Dacher Keltner said, you know, that a lot of us scientists are finding our way back to this very Christian ethic. And that was his words. He brought that
That's
up.
Pretty badass.
Yeah. And it is a Christian ethic. It's the true spirit of Christianity, which is about these emotions of humility, curiosity, openness, wonder, investigation, you know, and just trying to discover and understand. Really, the place that McNamara gets to after the Vietnam War, after millions of people have died, where McNamara has this beautiful quote from T.S. Eliot that he uses in The Fog of War, that it's about going back to the beginning and starting as if you'd never left, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense of completion, a sense of unity, a sense of rediscovering.
Right.
And that's the place that science is trying to get to. It's trying to complete this very long journey.
Do you think Sam Harris would disagree with everything you're saying?
I think that Sam Harris, that's the point. But, you know, somebody described Sam Harris's podcast as getting people that disagree with him on to convince them that they don't actually disagree at all. And that's what happens. It's amazing.
Because he's unrelentingly rational?
No, he's a lawyer. Yeah. That's what he is. He's a brilliant lawyer. Yeah. That's what Mark Schatzker said to me. He said, listen, dude should have been a lawyer. And he should have been a lawyer because he's amazing at arguing away points. But that's not the same thing as justice. And it's not the same thing as truth. And it's not the same thing as science. Science isn't really
a... Well, it was as though he was so concerned. I really wanted to hear him have a conversation with Jordan Peterson, but he was so hung up on, Jordan Peterson would keep saying, well, let's just agree to disagree and we'll move on. And then Sam Harris would say, okay, but I must plant a huge flag. And it's like, you know, all right, I get it. But, you know, he can't help himself. And again, though, that's also a guy who is, to the best of his ability, being as intellectually honest as he can. You know,
Well, let's define what is intellectual honesty.
Well, I would say intellectual honesty, and as I see it with Sam, is someone who is doing their very best to get to the truth as they see it, okay? In other words, they are listening, and more importantly, they are having people on that they don't agree with or at least have a different point of view. Sam puts himself into the arena. He fights. Now, he may fight in a way that takes, you know, maybe he doesn't fight very well, maybe very fairly, maybe very, maybe in that sense, he's not aware of his dishonest approach. I don't know. But for me, you know, I do appreciate the amount of time and thought Sam Harris has put into trying to get to, a conclusion that he can work with.
Well, let me ask you this, Brian. If a fighter never takes a punch, are they in the arena?
Well, you know, probably not. Yeah. You're always going to get hit.
Well, but so, you know, that's the point is that how, when I think, you know, I was thinking about this. When John Haidt was on our show, this was way, way back when.
And another guy you succeeded in.
Alienating, yeah.
Alienating. The great Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah.
Hunter was like, Jonathan was like, hey, Hunter, can you not call people names? It's not really what I don't really want to be associated with that. He's like, you can do what you want, but Jesus.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, John, sorry, I'll talk to Hunter. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's fine.
John Haidt is now back to liking my tweets, which is, okay, you know, good. A huge validation. But it's interesting because
you're a brilliant guy, Hunter. I mean, you're also a great guy, and you're also very another one who's very intellectually honest. I mean, you pissed off, you know, Sam Harris, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a point. It doesn't mean that you're certainly not a guy, you know, for all the teasing that you were doing. It was an experiment, and to an extent, it probably worked a little bit. And in some ways it didn't work. So listen.
But crucially, I'm willing to admit the things that I did wrong.
Yeah.
Like I was caught up in, you know, there were a whole bunch of people like my buddy at Atheist Sensei who, and by the way, Sam Harris has a very nice murderer who follows him, who proceeded to become the person who attacked me most, a guy named Jerry Wallington.
Jerry Wallington is a murderer?
He's a legit murderer.
What do you mean?
So this guy, Jerry Wallington, just like keeps on coming at me. So it was very interesting post Joe Rogan, like all these people came at me. And a lot of them were just sort of, you know, I was a white guy and I was talking about honor cultures and black culture. And so there was, you know, this guy, Big Nate, and he came at me and he's like, man, when white dudes like you were talking like that, it really pisses me off. But then Big Nate and I had a conversation. Now we're friends. Now we're going to work together. It's all great.
Yeah.
There was this relentless group of atheist fundamentalists who came at me. And the very interesting thing is that there's atheists, and then there are the people who identify as anti-theists. So these are the people who are the most radicalized most extreme.
Of course.
And they have no interest in any sort of compromise. It's, you know, very much one way or the other.
Yeah.
And there was this guy, Jerry Wallington, who came at me.
Because they believe, they blame the belief in God and all the evils of the world.
All the evils of the world. Just as Tom Woods blames all the evils of the world on government.
Yeah, that's right.
And just as Islamic fundamentalists blame all the evils of the world on the great white Satan.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of these fundamentalist ways of thinking, is that you blame on this very simple single variable explanation that is very easy to understand in the age of Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. Alex Jones has a, how complicated is Alex Jones's belief system? It's very simple. Everyone is lying to you. Everyone is lying to you except for Alex Jones. And yeah. This is the one source you can trust.
And by the way, everybody, if you're an Alex Jones fan, I've not listened to a lot of what he has to say.
Dude came up with Pizzagate.
He actually didn't. That was not his fault.
He did promote it.
To be fair, I've only listened to him on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he's just so loud and nuts.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's I'm being a little bit – yeah. I need to do more research. But again, I didn't. I heard him. I listened to him for quite a while, and I'm not a fan. I never will be. I'm sure that there's more to Alex Jones, but he is. Yeah, he's a showman.
But the point is that you know, we have these sort of old intuitions about, oh, I need to find out more about him before I jump to a conclusion. Yeah. There are now 130 million books, Brian. Yeah. You can't find out more about everyone.
Yeah, I know.
So
sometimes you got to go by your gut.
That's right.
And you can hear him speak for an hour, and you can just go, this guy's out of his mind, or at least this guy is. He's got an agenda here,
right?
And he's willing to say what he wants. Yeah.
That's what wisdom empowers. And yeah. Big Mike, how long do you think
recognition? I'm 50. I know. Yeah. I know a con man when I hear one.
That's right.
So I shouldn't apologize for disliking
that. Exactly. Guy. The point is that would you apologize for not liking McCarthy?
I don't like Trump.
Yeah.
He's a pathological narcissist. I don't like Alex Jones, and I don't like Joseph McCarthy. So
there you go.
I don't like those guys.
So there are the point is to be able to spot these people, yep, and to spot the pattern in their behavior and to spot what their real agenda is. Yep. Are they interested in truth? Are they really interested in trying to understand things? Or are they interested in the accumulation of power?
Yeah.
Are they interested in just winning for winning's sake? And so this guy, Jerry Wallington, comes at me on Twitter, and he just keeps on saying, what are the fundamentals of atheism, princess? What are the fundamentals of atheism?
He calls you princess?
He just keeps calling me princess.
Awesome.
He literally tweets this to me 1,000 times. And then at some point, somebody, one of the mixed metal artists, looks Jerry Wallington up and finds out that he legit killed someone. And so Jerry Wallington was in Costa Rica. He got drunk and then killed a transportation worker while driving, and then fled the country. Oh. And then they extradited him from Canada back to Costa Rica. And so somebody literally just drops in there, hey, Jerry, how was Costa Rica?
Ah, shit. Oh, poor Jerry.
But then Jerry starts saying, these people are just trying to misrepresent me. They're trying to discredit me.
Oh, and it's like... he might not have meant to. He probably got drunk. That was probably very
traumatic. Yeah, well, let me tell you that I don't
think... He's not a murderer. He killed somebody by accident.
Well, vehicular manslaughter.
Come on, man. Don't be that hard. But, all right, let's get off Jerry, but keep going.
But the point is that it was very interesting the kind of people that were coming at me from, you know, having criticized Sam Harris. And it was a lot of people who were very lost, right. A lot of people who were very angry, who had some axe to grind, who had some beef. Hmm. And one of the things that, you know, we've been talking about since then is that you can tell a lot about a sensei from the behavior of their students.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the great example of that is Karate Kid. There's this big difference between the students of Cobra Kai who run around in skeleton uniforms and go and beat people up, and then Daniel-san.
I was in that dojo.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing is that if you listen to Sam Harris and you listen to him closely, I don't think that Sam Harris is intellectually honest, but I think we may be operating from different definitions.
Right.
So for me, intellectual honesty comes down to, you can't have intellectual honesty without emotional honesty. So let's say that, you know, you and I are having this discussion. Why not this discussion? So we're having this discussion. And imagine that you come at me and you've tried to tell me that there were real problems with my behavior. Mm-hmm. And I've acknowledged those. Mm-hmm. I've admitted that I was wrong.
Sure.
And for offense that I've caused or for any problems that I've created, I am sorry.
Right.
Now, you're not going to hear Sam Harris say those words. And that is because Sam Harris is not intellectually honest, because he's not emotionally honest, because he's not willing to be wrong. He's a lawyer.
See, again, I don't know enough about him to make that accusation. Whereas, I do not think it's fair to Sam Harris to put him in the same category as someone like Alex Jones. My God, it's just not fair to him. He's way too rational. He's way too too smart.
But that's
and
the point. Is he rational? Based on what we know about the brain, is it possible for anyone to be purely rational?
No, and I don't think he would. I don't think he would. He would disagree with you on that. I really don't. I think the thing I liked what you said about his, you know, the flaw in his thinking. There may very well, like with all of us, there is a flaw in his thinking, which is what I'd like you to dilate on more.
Yeah.
You know, so because the weird thing is very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, so the acronym is
Western educated industrialized, rich and democratic.
Rich and democratic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a fair characterization probably for you and me and Sam. I mean, to probably a larger extent, Sam.
Yeah.
Because he's high. Well, no, I actually, he's not as, you guys are both probably.
No, he has a PhD, remember.
Yeah, but you're pretty damn educated, but yes. But I mean, the point being that I think what's more important and more relevant is to sort of dissect the flaw in his thinking.
Yeah.
And why that is sort of, why that needs to be taken on, why that needs to be, if not teased into your arena,
yeah,
at least exposed.
Well,
and maybe engaged, you know, because I'd be very interested in hearing Sam and what Sam had to say about the flaw in his thinking.
Well,
because he's self-aware. I mean, he's self-aware enough to know that he's not perfect, that he probably has these tendencies. You know, I just have to believe that. He strikes me as that guy. I know you're looking at me in a skeptical way.
Well, I think that's the thing. Ultimately, people's actions, I think, speak louder than their words.
Yeah.
And, you know, so
his fame, you know, he has a lot of fame and he has a lot of fans, and he's probably my age or a little younger. It's hard not to kind of drink your own Kool-Aid a little bit. It's very difficult.
I think that's the interesting thing. The way that you don't drink your own Kool-Aid is by making yourself open to criticism, by having a team of rivals. Sam Harris does not have a team of rivals. Even John Haidt goes on his podcast and is not able to challenge Sam Harris.
With the podcast, when he said there are two elephants, they basically spent all their time talking around the elephants.
Well, the point was to prove, because Sam Harris and John Haidt had fought for many years. Mm. And so the point of the podcast was to show that they could have a pleasant conversation. I can have a pleasant conversation with Adolf Hitler, right? We can talk about his commitment to animal rights, his veganism,
his yoga enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, the fact that we both love wearing lederhosen. Like, you can have a pleasant conversation with anyone.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Larry King's great gift is that Larry King manages to have literally everyone on, and by the end of it, you're like, wow, this person is a great humanitarian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can always do that, but I think the more interesting thing is to get into the ways that you're wrong. Like, that's what when I had John Haidt on, you know, and in general, as we've moved forward with mixed mental arts, I'm interested in being wrong, because the more often you're wrong, the more punches you take, the better you get. You're finding the holes in your mental game. And I think Sam Harris is interested in being right. And that's why I don't think that he's learned very much. But the key thing in terms of this weird culture.
Yeah, I think that you could say about someone like Sam, because he's built an industry on a point of view. He's built an industry on a philosophy. He's built an industry on a political and philosophical position.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sam spends a great deal. It's almost as though here is my fort.
Mm-hmm.
And here is my mount, and now I will invite you to try to climb these walls. But so it's almost as though his point of view is fixed, his ideas are fixed, his philosophy is fixed, and then he will spend as much time as he can, if not engaging you directly, he'll find a hole in your logic at the very beginning and not even engage.
That's right,
i.e., Jordan Peterson. Jonathan Haidt. So I see
or Dan Carlin.
Or Dan Carlin.
Thomas Woods does the same thing. Yeah. Alex Jones does the same thing.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah.
As opposed to what we're trying to do is get torn down, get beaten up. And it's amazing. I don't fully remember what it was, but at some point in the Jonathan Haidt interview, I realized it was I've pissed off John Haidt before. I pissed off John Haidt when he came on in episode 53 or whatever, where I said something and John Haidt was like, no. And he like smacked me down verbally. Yeah. And it was great. I loved it. Yeah. And my favorite part of the whole Joe Rogan experience was the last half hour. Because, you know, suddenly being in an environment where someone is really pushing you back, that's what reveals the holes in your mental game. Mm-hmm. Can I, under pressure, explain these things?
And I actually thought you did a good job because I've heard your arguments so often.
Yeah.
And so Joe probably felt, because it was the first time he was hearing these, that you were going on these long tangents. But because I'm so familiar with your position, it didn't seem that way for me. I thought actually you fortified your position very well. But I can understand where the confusion for Joe would be because, you know, it was – I think what Joe's objection was the same as my objection, which was you don't – you're characterizing Sam Harris in pretty simplistic terms. And are you sure he thinks this way? And Joe wasn't really sure because Joe didn't – it kind of took Joe by surprise. It would take me by surprise, which is I know Sam's brilliant. You're accusing him of this thing. I don't quite know how to match your wits on this, or I don't quite know how to fortify my position because I haven't even thought about it, right. But I'm just hearing a lot of this stuff and I'm hearing accusations. And so I think Joe did what most normal people would do.
Totally.
Are you sure this is his position? Because you're characterizing him in pretty basic terms.
Well, and
I do think that like a lot of people, Sam has probably to an extent made up his very rational mind on where the truth, or at least the side that the truth and progress are on.
Mm-hmm.
To a large extent, he's probably right if you cast the enemy the way he does, with statistics and with sort of a very bold fundamentalist and literal lines.
That's right.
And I don't think that that's a fair characterization of the Arab world, regardless of what the Pew polls say.
Yeah. And also, crucially, I mean, they keep on using this, you know, Sam Harris and Ayaan Hirsi Ali keep on using this analogy of the, you know, having an Islamic reformation. I want a scientific reformation. But I understand the historical analogy. In the Protestant Reformation, the Bible changed 0%. There was no editing. What really changed were the values around violence, the governmental institutions, separation of church and state, all of these sorts of things. But you don't have to change the Bible. You don't have to change the Quran. All you have to do is deal with the culture. And the culture is an honor culture. It's the same culture as Sicily. It's the same culture as the South.
What culture are you talking about?
The Arab culture is an honor culture. And the same culture as Sicily. Now,
the enemy is not religion, it's culture. But I would also say the Arab world is also a product of the tyrannies, the military dictatorships and the monarchies, the tyrannical systems of government that these people have lived under for at least 50 years, and so been sort of pushed to the point of desperation.
Well, if we want to talk about real intellectual honesty, what is real intellectual honesty? Real intellectual honesty is Francis Fukuyama. Now, Francis Fukuyama has this thing that he talks about where he says, how do we get to Denmark? How do you take a country like Libya and get it to a place where it's so stable, so well-ordered, so well-functioning that it functions like Denmark? And Francis Fukuyama says, the honest truth is we don't really know.
Mm.
Now, that is intellectual honesty. And Francis Fukuyama knows far more about states and civilizations than Sam Harris. And one of the things Francis Fukuyama will say is that, you know, I just watched a thing by him today, and he was talking about how, you know, there's the West, there's these large countries like China and Russia that are very autocratic, and then there's this vast country, area of stateless societies, North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, and the Middle East, all the way to India. And he said, you know, to even have states, functioning states, and they may well be autocratic, they may not be democratic quite yet, would be a huge, huge help to these people to have some sort of political stability.
Sure.
Then you might even find that there's a strong religious component to some of those stable state institutions. But the reality is that Sam Harris is a critic. Tom Woods is a critic. You know, Alex Jones is a critic. And none of them, I think, is a man in the ring. They're not there like Fukuyama trying to actually figure out how do you realistically solve these problems. Because I'll tell you that the actual problem of how you build a state, as the founding fathers would tell you if they were here, is not easy. It doesn't involve these simplistic answers of remove government, everyone is lying to you but me, and religion is the problem. In fact, what you have to come down to is you'll find that you have to find out that there are certain things you should tolerate and certain things you shouldn't tolerate. And one of those things that you have to be very judicious in what you tolerate is religion, because people feel very strongly about these things.
Well, I mean, the founding fathers, the brilliance of the founding fathers, think about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yep.
Do you hear how general that is?
Yep.
Do you hear how incredibly unrestrictive that is to the mm-hmm. human condition? You have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not even happiness, but you're allowed to pursue happiness, whatever that means to you. Orgies, in my case, or eating, you know, vegan food.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, that is. That's the genius of the founding fathers, was to give human beings that kind of latitude.
Now let me
not
ask,
to try to get
control
rid of
every
religion,
yep.
get rid of government.
Now, Brian, since we're talking about statistics,
God, I'm learning a lot.
Here's a statistic that I'd like to share with you, Brian.
Yeah.
Do you know that 76% of doctors are religious? Did you know that over 50% of them believe in some kind of afterlife? Now, that, of course, you know, they're doctors. They're in a medical profession. Should we insist that every Orthodox doctor who chooses to wear a yarmulke or chooses to keep kosher take the bacon communion before being allowed to practice medicine? I don't think they should, because I'm going to tell you something, Brian. I dated a doctor, and it's very interesting when you date people, you learn a whole lot of things. And this doctor that I dated, I used to hang out with all of her friends from med school, and they'd all gone into different residencies and different specialties. And you know, the one consistent thing, what they all agreed, is that the worst, most difficult specialization you could go into medicine is pediatric oncology.
I bet.
Yeah. I mean, having to see kids dying of cancer every damn day.
I bet.
And you're doing everything that medical science can do. You're doing the very best that you can do, and you're constantly failing.
Yeah.
Now, Brian, how would you cope with that?
I would have to believe that there's got to be a reason and a purpose and some justification, some metaphysical justification for this kind of pain, especially when a father falls to the ground because there's no cure for his four-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said that. You're an atheist until you're in a foxhole. You're an atheist until your child is writhing in pain and there's nothing you can do for him. Your hands come together, you fall to your knees and pray. When I watch those towers fall, and Alex Jones knows why they did, I look down at my hands, and I'm not a religious guy, and my hands were clasped.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's
and the thing is, Brian, I work with children too, but I don't have to see them die of cancer every day.
No,
so
you get to see them learn.
That's right. And so, you know, I have a fixable problem. I have something that I'm in control of, and I don't, you know, religion is not a big part of my life. You know, people keep asking me what I believe. I describe myself as an apathetheist. I'm frankly indifferent to the question of God. I'm focused on human problems.
Right.
And I believe that God, whether he, she, zir exists, can take
she, zir.
can take care of him, her, zir self.
Yep.
And then,
zir self. You're very good with these pronouns.
There's 70 of them to learn. I've got some catching
up
to do.
Yeah, you're good with languages. You're good with languages.
But so it's not a big part of my life. But I will tell you something, Brian, that having spent time with doctors, I would never, ever dare tell someone who is a pediatric oncologist that they shouldn't have their faith.
I love ending on that note. You speak a great deal of wisdom, and I always appreciate how much you think about everything that you believe, or at least everything that you are in the process of believing. Let's turn that into a verb, ladies and gentlemen.
And that's the point. It's the path to wisdom. And that's I think, part of how you spot a fundamentalist. Anybody who thinks they've reached the destination is very far from where they claim to be.
And they're defending those walls.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I want to have an episode two of this. This is really awesome.
That sounds great.
Thank you, Hunter Motz.
Thank you, Brian Callen.
This has been Brian Callen. And everything Hunter learned, he got from me.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.